Are credit default swaps, subprime mortgages, and rapid-fire financial trading a sin? I'm David Brancaccio in New York. First, the House is set to vote today on a bill that would free dozens of small and mid-sized banks from rules put in place in 2008 after the financial crisis. Senate Republicans, allied with some moderate Democrats, cleared that bill, so if it gets a final nod from the House, it could become law as soon as this week. Marketplace's Renata Sago has been following this.
This bill would make it possible for more banks to skirt some of the Federal Reserve's requirements, the biggest being stress tests. Right now, banks with more than $50 billion in assets have to assess whether or not they have enough cash to stay afloat during a crisis. The bill up for vote today would raise the asset cap to $250 billion, so basically more banks would catch a break from these tests. Small banks would also become exempt from the Volcker Rule. That rule does stuff like restrict banks from using customers' deposits to trade riskier products like derivatives and options. It also prohibits banks from owning or partnering or even investing in hedge funds. That Volcker Rule itself is getting a rewrite, too. Congress is expected to unveil a new rule with fewer restrictions next week.
Renata, thank you. We now have had not quite one day to digest the Supreme Court decision saying employees who agreed to settle disputes with the boss through individual arbitration can't later join a big class action lawsuit. But how sweeping is this? The publication Slate yesterday wrote that the court just demolished labor rights and, again, quoting, effectively legalized wage theft. I asked veteran Supreme Court watcher Amy Howe, co-founder of SCOTUS blog, how far she thinks this ruling went.
Pretty far. I'm not sure I would call it wage theft. I mean, what the Supreme Court ruled is that employers can require employees to agree to arbitrate proceedings individually. And so this does mean individuals probably are more likely not to bring their claim simply because it can be expensive to bring a claim to arbitration all by yourself, whereas it might be more worthwhile to do it as a group.
I mean, part of this is the notion that settling an individual arbitration case is one thing for a larger company, as opposed to the deterrent possibilities of a big class action case. A big class action case might get the employer to actually change behavior.
I think that's right. And that's what Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg in her dissent suggested, that employers may be more likely to cut corners, she said, because they know that it's less likely to lead to any claims at all, much less a large class action or collective arbitration.
AmyLHowe.com also gets you to her How on the Court coverage. Amy Howe, thank you.
Thanks for inviting me.
At marketplace.org, I also talk with Howe about one intersection between arbitration clauses and the Me Too movement. The law firms that were forcing summer law clerks to sign arbitration agreements this spring that would also apply in cases of sexual harassment. We're also watching for Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg's testimony in Europe later today in Brussels, with its user data abused for political purposes and new European data protection rules that land this Friday. Financial markets have been shown to be unable to regulate themselves and that market participants often do things that are immoral. Who says that? The Roman Catholic Church. We wanted to draw your attention to a document with the Pope's imprimatur that you may have missed late last week. This document also suggests that some financial derivatives, such as credit default swaps implicated in the last financial crisis, are unethical. Let's connect to Rome, where we find the BBC's Vatican reporter David Willey. Morning, David.
Good morning.
So the Vatican seems to be concerned about exotic financial instruments. What's the context for this?
The Pope, I think, is rather dissatisfied with the way in which Vatican departments have been focusing on the role of women in the church and dealing with problems of sexuality, rather than injustices which affect the world financial system. The Pope is very conscious of the enormous gap between rich and poor in Latin America, where he comes from. This document, this latest document, is an attempt to tell people working in the Vatican and issuing instructions to the world's Roman Catholics that perhaps the Church ought to concentrate on poverty, injustice, and the world financial system. And this is an attempt to give guidelines to Catholics all over the world as to what they should do in terms of dealing with questions of poverty in this world rather than concentrating on the theory of what's going to happen in the next world.
It's so interesting. Sometimes financiers tell me that they recognize that markets are amoral, but this is the Pope suggesting that some pieces of financial markets are immoral with an I.
Indeed. And the document actually specifies matters as offshore tax havens and financial instruments such as derivatives and credit default swaps as being immoral and unjust. It's a very interesting, rather subtle change in the voice of the Vatican, but an important one nonetheless. Of course, to what extent a document like this is going to get across to the decision makers all over the world is a moot point. But this document does reflect a change of emphasis in this papacy. It's a very different sort of Vatican from the days of Pope John Paul II or Pope Benedict, for example.
The BBC's Vatican correspondent David Willey in Rome, thank you.
You're welcome.
That Vatican document also targets subprime mortgages, high-frequency trading, and the shadow banking system, saying they are also among parts of the international financial system too often abused, with the effect of making people poorer. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.